and deal with Israel while stressing there won't be any normalization with the regime. Israeli forces kill a Palestinian following an armed attack near the West Bank city of Al-Khalil, which left one settler dead and four others injured. And more than 150 people are killed and over 150 others wounded during a human crush in the South Korean capital Seoul. Many thanks for joining us. The Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, says both Israel and the U.S. were forced to accept a recently signed maritime deal with Lebanon.
Very difficult for their security, for their economy. And this was a humiliating issue for the Israelis that you have been since 2012, 2013, drilling, and you promised your people, you promised the people of this entity, and now there is a need, a global need or regional need, that you need this, and then you would annul Quraysh. They did not have that option. They could not have the ability to go to a war. They did not have the ability or the option to stop drilling in Quraysh, and therefore their only option was to go to indirect talks. Also, the Americans were under pressure as well.
Nasrallah held the maritime deal as a historic and a major victory for Lebanon. The Hezbollah leader added that the U.S. was under pressure since their priority was the Ukraine war. He cited American officials who said they cannot tolerate another war in the region. Hezbollah chief said Americans lobbied to pressure everybody during the negotiations, but Lebanese officials stood fast on their stance. Nasrallah added that the maritime agreement has nothing to do with the so-called normalization with the Tel Aviv regime. Israel and Lebanon officially approved an agreement on Thursday laying out their maritime boundaries. The deal allows them to conduct offshore energy exploration from Karish gas field. Earlier, we were joined by anti-war activist Richard Becker in San Francisco to get his take on the maritime deal between Lebanon and the Israeli regime. Let's take a listen.
Well, I don't think there could have been a deal without the participation and the role of Hezbollah as the what is really the strongest organization in Lebanon. Certainly, you know, given the history of the expulsion of Israeli forces from the south of Lebanon, and in the 2007 war, was really a signal. Those were signals of how strong Hezbollah is, and how strong it is relative to other forces in Lebanon, but also how strong it is in relation to Israel. And it's really the only movement that has been able to cause Israel to have to withdraw, to retreat in the way that it has. So I think that without the participation of Hezbollah, in all likelihood, Israel would have just taken what it wanted to, or would have imposed its own borders, regardless of the interests of Lebanon, in the Mediterranean and in relation to the gas fields there.
At least one Israeli settler has been killed and four others injured in a shooting attack in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. According to Israeli media, a Palestinian was among the four wounded. They claimed that the operation was carried out by a Palestinian attacker who was subsequently shot dead by Israeli forces. The Israeli army says it is conducting a sweep of the area for additional suspects. The latest operation comes as the occupied territories have seen a steep rise in shooting operations by Palestinians in recent weeks. The shooting also comes just days before Israel is to hold its fifth general election in less than 4 years. Palestinian resistance movements Hamas and Islamic Jihad hailed the Al-Khalil operation. Hazem Qasem, a Hamas spokesman, said the operation proves the resistance in the West Bank can surprise the occupation forces at any place. He added that the resistance bullets are a practical response to the Zionist regime settlement expansion in the West Bank. Mona Kendil, our correspondent in Ramallah, has given us more details on the shooting operation in Al-Khalil.
Well, what happened this night is that a Palestinian man arrived at the entrance, or at a checkpoint at the entrance of the illegal settlement of Kiryat Arba in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron, and opened fire there. Clashes took place between the Israeli soldiers and this Palestinian man. He was shot and killed, according to the Israeli military, who named this Palestinian man as Muhammad Kamal Al-Jabari. And he was identified as a member of the armed wing, or the military wing, of Hamas movement. As you have mentioned, at least one Israeli settler was killed. Four others were wounded, including a Palestinian man who was identified as a paramedic who arrived at the scene in the Palestinian ambulance after there were news that Palestinians had been killed, or at least one Palestinian was shot by the Israeli forces.
Palestinian resistance factions held a rally in Gaza to drum up support for Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank amid the increasing Israeli aggression and a use of lethal force against Palestinians. Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon has more in this report.
Palestinians rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to express their solidarity with people in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces have stepped up their crackdown, carrying out attacks across the occupied territories and the city of Al-Quds in recent weeks. This while more than 130 Palestinians have been killed by regime forces in the West Bank this year alone, amid an increase in armed resistance. Palestinian resistance factions have expressed their unwavering support for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
As we stand here, we affirm the unity of the Palestinian people in the face of the Zionist enemy. Palestinian resistance factions will always stand by our people in Al-Quds and in the occupied West Bank in the face of Zionist crimes. We will continue our armed resistance until the liberation of Palestine.
While Israeli forces increase their attacks in the occupied West Bank, extremist Jewish settlers have been violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds under the silent, watchful eye of the international community. During the rally, Palestinian resistance groups warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, while asserting that armed resistance is the key to freedom.
We are loyal to armed resistance and to the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds. We are fighting for a just cause, and nothing will break the resistance against the Zionist enemy. The criminal Zionist enemy has committed crimes against the Palestinians in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank, and it will pay for the crimes.
Palestinians say they want the occupied West Bank to be part of a future independent Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital.
People here vow to utilize all forms of resistance to defend Al-Quds against Israeli aggression. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
In Iran, funerals have been held for the victims of a recent terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz. In the city of Mashhad, thousands of mourners turned out for the funeral service. They chanted slogans condemning terrorism and those behind the crime. Another funeral was also held in Shiraz earlier in the day. At least 15 people were confirmed dead in the Wednesday terrorist attack, among them women and children. Over 2 dozen others were also wounded. A gunman started shooting from one of the entrances of the shrine. He then headed to the main compound, firing randomly at pilgrims and staff. The assailant was finally injured by security forces and later succumbed to his wounds in the hospital. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility for the attack.
On the third day of a public mourning in the southern Iranian city of Shiraz, following a terrorist attack on the holy shrine of Shah Cheragh, a huge crowd of people from different walks of life took part in the funeral procession of the victims.
I tell the enemies that we support the establishment and no one can harm it. We will be victorious.
I came to this rally to show that we are united. Iranian people should support each other and stay united so that Iran does not turn into a country like Syria.
At least 15 people were confirmed dead in the terrorist attack on Wednesday, among them women and children.
If you were truly courageous, you would fight in the battlefield, just like what General Soleimani did. But you attack a holy religious place and kill women and children. This is inhumane.
Tens of thousands of mourners from different walks of life took part in the event. Holding pictures of the victims and chanting slogans, the participants condemned terrorism and those behind the vicious act of terror in Shiraz.
It was our duty to take part in this event, and I tell the terrorists who committed this crime that killing us would only make the Iranian nation more conscious.
The mourners also chanted slogans against the supporters of Daesh terrorist group, particularly the United States and Israel. The coffins of the martyrs were then flown to the northeastern city of Mashhad, which houses the mausoleum of 8th Shia Imam Imam Reza, where thousands of mourners bid farewell to the victims.
Shedding the blood of innocent civilians in a religious holy shrine is a heinous crime denounced by people globally. Presence of a huge crowd of people in the funeral of martyrs of Shiraz terror attack shows the Iranian nation's unity in the face of enemies who seek to undermine the country's security. Mahdi Abbasian, Shiraz.
Moving on now, at least 9 people have been killed after a tanker exploded near a residential area in the east of the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. According to security officials, at least 13 people were also injured in the blast. In a statement following the incident, security officials said the explosion was an accident and not an act of terrorism. Some Iraqi media said 11 people died in the blast and 14 others were wounded. Reports say the explosion took place at a car park near a football field. Most of the victims were amateur playing football in the field. At least 151 people have been killed in a stampede in the South Korean capital, Seoul. Officials say over 150 others, including foreigners, were injured in the incident and transferred to nearby hospitals. They say the death toll could rise as some of the injured are in critical condition. According to the fire department, most of those killed are in their teens and 20s. The incident had happened after a huge crowd poured into a central district of Seoul for the Halloween festivities. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has ordered a task force to be set up to treat the injured. He has also declared a national mourning period and ordered a thorough investigation into the cause of the disaster. Terrified by the expulsion drive in India, Rohingya refugees now allege intimidation and physical abuse by villains. As Munawar Zaman reports, a number of children and women were beaten up in one of the refugee camps on the outskirts of New Delhi as fear mounted within the destitute community. Here is the story.
Rohingya refugees in the suburbs of New Delhi are being threatened by a new onslaught against the community. They claim some men have attacked and beaten women and children living in the refugee camp. One of the women is critically injured and being treated in the hospital. Local residents claim refugee children had blocked a narrow road in the locality, while the members of the Rohingya community maintain they have nowhere to go. Meanwhile, the city police filed a complaint and an investigation is underway.
It's the government that sent us here after our camp was burnt down mysteriously. Our children have nowhere else to play or go. This is not the first time we have been beaten up. We don't want any trouble as we are already facing a lot of misery. Our children don't even have the privilege to go to school. What other options do they have?
India is home to some 40,000 Rohingya refugees based on official figures, but reports suggest there are hundreds of thousands living across many parts of the country. Recent expulsion drives from the government have forced many to go into hiding in undisclosed locations, fearing detention, deportation and separation. The Indian government in recent years has taken the issue of these refugees to the parliament, with majority of the members calling them a security threat and therefore demanding their deportation. Rights activists have time and again reminded the administration about their plight, urging them for an immediate halt to any deportation plan. The destitute community is in utter desperation as intimidation, detention, deportation and night raids have become the order of the day. The Indian government calls them a security threat and prone to radicalization. For decades, the minority community faced systematic persecution at home in Buddhist-majority Myanmar. In recent years, the UN has accused Myanmar of genocide after hundreds of thousands fled to neighboring Bangladesh. Rights activists say the ruling BJP is fueling resentment since it won election in 2014. It calls the Rohingya a security threat, while the policy for refugees from other countries remains different. Persecuted Rohingya Muslims are being treated as illegal immigrants wherever they have settled after fleeing carnage in Myanmar. They are now living in makeshift camps as refugees across different parts of South Asia, especially in India, Bangladesh and Malaysia. Activists in India have stressed the urgent need to protect their rights as refugees. They urge the Indian government to formulate a uniform refugee policy to treat refugees equally, regardless of caste, ethnicity or faith.
Russia and Ukraine have carried out their latest exchange of prisoners of war, with both sides returning around 50 people. Ukrainian military officials have confirmed the return of 52 prisoners of war, including soldiers, border guards and National Guard members. The Russian officials, for their part, said Ukraine had handed over 50 prisoners of war. The officials in Kiev say more exchanges are being worked on. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia has freed a total of 1,031 prisoners since March. The head of the Donetsk region had said earlier on Saturday that a prisoner swap with Ukraine was taking place. Earlier this month, the two sides exchanged more than 100 prisoners of war in the first of all female swap deal since the beginning of the war in February.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United States is the only large wealthy country in the world that doesn't have universal health care. The U.S. healthcare system ranks last among high-income countries. In this regard, we have taken a look at the World Media for further details on this issue. Stay tuned, please. The website of Common Dreams wrote, a new report reveals how a lack of health coverage, underinsurance, and unaffordable medical bills still plague millions of Americans despite healthcare reforms in recent years, and makes the latest case for improving and expanding the Medicare system to everyone in the U.S., according to progressives. The Commonwealth Fund conducted a survey between March and July and found that due to high premiums, deductibles and copays, 46% of U.S. adults have delayed or altogether avoided receiving health care in the last year. Up to a quarter of people with the chronic health problems were among those who had skipped getting the health care they need, with respondents saying out-of-pocket costs for prescription drugs, for example, life-saving insulin for diabetes, had forced them to skip doses or not fill a prescription. 42% of respondents have struggled to pay medical bills, and 43% were found to be inadequately insured, despite the often cited statistic that the 2010 passage of the Affordable Care Act, ACA, helped 20 million Americans gain coverage. Nearly a quarter of adults in the country are underinsured with health insurance that fails to provide them with affordable health care, charging them high monthly premiums for coverage, covering medical care only after high deductibles have been fulfilled, or leaving certain kinds of health care out of coverage. Those who were underinsured included 29% of people who had employer-sponsored healthcare plans and 44% of people who purchased coverage individually or through the healthcare marketplace set up by ACA. The average insurance deductible for employer health plans with single coverage is more than $1,000 and is more than $2,000 for healthcare.gov marketplace plans, reads the report, adding out-of-pocket maximums average $4,272 for single coverage in employer plans and range up to $8,700 in marketplace plans. These plan features leave people with considerable cost exposure in case of a sudden illness or accident. 9% of people surveyed were completely without health insurance. The statistics revealed in the survey amount to a disgrace in the American healthcare system, said the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS. This is shameful, said the group, adding, no one should have to go into debt because they need to access healthcare. No one should have to choose between seeing a doctor and paying bills. Half of the people surveyed said they would be unable to pay an unexpected $1,000 medical bill within 30 days, including 69% of black adults and 63% of Latinos. The Commonwealth Fund prominently pointed out that Americans have record high health coverage, but Representative Pramila Jayapal, the author of the Medicare for All Act, which has 121 co-sponsors in the U.S. House, pointed out that 26 million Americans are still lacking health insurance. She said, let's pass Medicare for All and guarantee health care as a right to all. Also, the website of Truth Out wrote, racial inequities in the U.S. are emerging in the vaccination and treatment of monkeypox, just as they saw with COVID. In recent weeks, roughly 25% of new monkeypox cases have occurred among white patients. Yet more than 33% of monkeypox vaccines have gone to white patients as of September 27th. Financial and logistical barriers to monkeypox care can disproportionately affect patients of color. In New York City, appointments for monkeypox treatment and vaccination distributed on a first-come, first-served basis have disproportionately gone to wealthy white individuals who have better access to healthcare system. The first vaccines were doled out in Chelsea, a mostly white neighborhood, during the middle of the work days. Even when vaccines began to be distributed in Harlem, a neighborhood that is 82% non-white, appointments appear to go largely to white residents from outside the community, leaving community members frustrated. Such disparities mirror larger trends in the U.S. society. Across specialties, physicians disproportionately spend their time seeing white patients, despite patients of color, on average, having higher medical needs. Due to the legacy of slavery, indigenous genocide, xenophobic immigration regulations, and centuries of racist economic policies, patients of color in the U.S. are more likely to be under or uninsured, and in general, have lower incomes. Patients of color are also more likely to experience difficulties accessing transportation or taking paid time off work to access appointments. The latter is particularly important for individuals with monkeypox, which requires prolonged isolation and whose painful lesions can inhibit the ability to work. Americans need explicitly anti-racist policies to repair these harms. Medicare for All would eliminate financial barriers to healthcare and in doing so help address the racial inequities highlighted by the monkeypox pandemic. Medicare for All would establish a single-payer system in which all U.S. residents would receive health insurance. All U.S. residents would have access to medications, doctor appointments, and hospitalizations with low or no copayments. Undocumented individuals could be covered under the current House bill as to be determined by U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services. Studies show that Medicare for All would have saved 340,000 lives so far during the COVID pandemic, primarily by eliminating financial barriers to care while saving billions of dollars annually. It's a rare free lunch in economic policy because savings under a single-payer system far outstrip the cost of expanding coverage. The U.S. spends nearly a third of all healthcare dollars on administration, approximately $800 billion annually, primarily coming in the form of private health insurance company overhead and profits. Medicare's fee-for-service plan, in contrast, has 2.4% overhead. Medicare for All could address racial disparities in monkeypox access by making all services free of charge, disproportionately benefiting racial and ethnic minorities. Most Americans would see their income rise, not only because premiums and copayments would fall to near zero, but because for the majority of Americans with employer-sponsored insurance, the potential salary that is currently tied up in insurance subsidies would be freed up. Taken together, these financial boons could disproportionately benefit people of color, who are more likely to delay health care because of cost. It's notable that in the Veterans Health Administration, a single-payer healthcare system, many racial disparities in health outcomes are mitigated or absent. When diseases like monkeypox disproportionately affect communities of color, the financial impact on hospital system is not equal, reproducing a structural racism. In general, hospitals primarily serving patients of color earn fewer profits, since these patients are disproportionately uninsured or covered by public insurance, which reimburses less than private insurance. This codifies a perverse financial system in which white lives are more valued than the lives of people of color.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is a beautiful aphorism from the Holy Prophet's 11th infallible heir, Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him. polytheism of certain people is more hidden than the creeping of ants on a black piece of cloth in a dark night.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, ways of keeping secret. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the ways of keeping secrets in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam gives importance to the secrets of the people, and it says that it is necessary on someone who has the secrets of others to keep it and to save it and to do not share it with the people, to do not disclose it with the people. Therefore, one of the ways which is been said in the Islamic teachings is that we must acknowledge people about the importance of keeping secrets, the advantages of keeping secrets. If we are aware of advantages of keeping secrets, then obviously everyone, whenever they have a secret, they will save it, they will secure it, they will keep it, they will not share it with everyone. Therefore, one of the reasons that today, if we see that we are sharing our secrets with someone, or maybe if the backbiting has become something normal, or it is normalized in the societies, it is only because we are unaware of the importance of keeping secrets. And this is important, that when you tell someone about the importance of it, when we acknowledge people, when we tell about the personal life of the people, how important it is, as it is their life, like as it is, as their own personal life is important, therefore people will give importance to the other's life. Generally, we just think about ourselves, and this is the material life, that think about yourself and not the others. So this is wrong. We need to think about others as well when we are living in a society. And the way we keep our own secrets, we must keep others' secrets as well, inshallah. Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the ways of keeping secrets. And we said that one of the ways is to be attentive towards the importance of keeping secret, or to acknowledge people about the importance of keeping secrets. Because if people know about it, then obviously they will struggle in keeping the secrets of the others, and they will not disclose the secrets of the others or the things that they know about the other's life. We can see, like, for example, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that jumi'a khayru dunya wal akhirati fi kitman as-sirri wa musadaqati al-akhyar. There are two things in which all the goodness of this world and the hereafter is gathered in two things. Number one, keeping secrets, fi kitman as-sirr, to keep the secrets, to secure the secrets, wa musadaqati al-akhyar, and having a good friend, a friend who performs good deeds. So these two things basically have, in these two things, the goodness of the world, this world and the hereafter, it is gathered. On the other hand, he says, for example, like siruka sururuka in katamtahu, he says that in your secrets there is happiness for you. You know, if I have something and I need to hide from the people, maybe I have done something wrong, I don't want people to know it, it is related to my personal life, and if people know about it, they will think wrongly about me, or maybe they will have another perspective about me, and maybe I'm not like that. So therefore, when, as far as it is being secured, as far as if this secret is not leaked, then obviously I am happy. But when once it is leaked, then maybe it is hard for me to live. Therefore, there are two things. We should not commit such things which make us feel ashamed in the public. On the other hand, if we have secrets, we need to keep it, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, 5 with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people. If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist. I said, children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces. Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on 2 major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and the subjects. And of course we have in those areas the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out three patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cake Land, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cake Land after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting dark elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well. Just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Divisions within the UK Tory party are much more intense than those within other conservative parties in the West. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The website of Truth Out wrote, Johnson was the front man in the populist turn, a British Trump. The comparisons with Trump can be overrigged. Johnson doesn't regularly consort with fascists, nor is he quite so graciously vulgar. Yet Trump, he is a lawbreaker and is prone to smear opponents with inflammatory falsehoods. Like Trump, he is a bully in clown's costume. He kicks down, but in an ever-so-British manner through wit. His upbeat humor casts iron confidence, nostalgic racism, casual nastiness towards oppressed communities, and the ability to breezily say unsayable things form the package that topped a cruel strike among many voters who, in insecure times, shore up brittle selves by championing the right to de-ingrate others. Being mocking and facetious, Johnson's banter unsettles the sense of tradition that Tories hold dear. Likewise, his iconoclasm and unpredictability. At one moment, he will blurt out, "Business." The next, he is cordially reminding his financial friends that following the Great Recession, he stuck up for bankers when everyone else wanted to hang them from the nearest lamppost. No wonder many Tory MPs gaze at Boris in mesmerized ambivalence. They share his bigotry and admire his ability to win support among the plebs, yet they shudder at the corrosion of traditional conservative values. Then there is Johnson's lying in pathological profusion to the public, frequently to the EU negotiators when signing the Northern Ireland Protocol of the Brexit Withdrawal Agreement, and even to the Queen, for goodness sake. His serial mendacity has brought an investigation by Parliament's Privileges Committee into whether he misled MPs over his numerous COVID rule breaches. If found guilty, he would face suspension as an MP. This looming case swayed many Tory MPs against nominating him to replace Truss as party leader. It's sobering to note that, but for this coincidence of timing, Johnson would likely have regained the premiership. Prior to politics, Johnson's career was in the press. It's one of very few economic sectors that largely backed a hard Brexit. The other was finance, with hedge funds to the fore. It was here that Rishi Sunak won his spurs, and he sings to the hedge fund hymnsheet, slash regulations and give the markets free rein. Sunak has become PM against hostility from the populist right. He symbolizes the cosmopolitan globalism they abhor. They may forgive him his U.S. green card, his Santa Monica Beach penthouse, and his vast fortune, but not his marriage to an Indian woman, his skin color, or his recent fiscal policies. As Chancellor under Johnson, he hiked Britain's tax burden to its highest level in 70 years to fund the lockdown furlough scheme. Later, he applied the final shove when Tory MPs removed Johnson from office.
Johnson's Secretary of State for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport, Nadine Dorries, went so far as to share a montage of Rishi stabbing Boris in the back. For all the talk of party unity, these scars run very deep.